Namaste, Vidya. Salutations to all. My name is Dakshal Chaitanya. I'm very honored and pleased to be here to introduce tonight Swami Vidyadhamananda Saraswati. I've had the pleasure of going to Swamiji for over 25 years, and I first met him at the Akshavidya Gurukulam of Puja Swami Dayanandaji in Salesburg, Pennsylvania. I know a number of you are familiar with Puja Swamiji. I don't know if Swami Vidyadhamananda will remember, but I met him first in Puja Swamiji's kitchen. I walked in and we were having lunch, and I saw this young Swami there. I thought, oh, who is this? And subsequently, I had the good fortune of hearing Swamiji speak on a number of occasions and attended a number of camps that he's given throughout the year. Swamiji is currently the senior most disciple, and I'm charged with teaching at the Gurukulam. When Buddha Swamiji is not in residence there, he teaches a number of months during the year. And he also, when he's not traveling, teaching in Dhamma, he resides in an ashram in Gujarat, which is called the Dhyatma Vidya Mandir. There's a very beautiful mantra in Munika Upanishad, which talks about who a guru is. It says, Pariksha Lokan Karmachatan Brahmanam Yurvedamaya Nasya Protector Dena Tadvikna Narakam Sahaguru Meva Abhigachet Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Very briefly, it says that when I examine my experiences in life, I find that really what I'm searching for is a fundamental, universal human problem. And Tadvikna Narakam, for the sake of knowing the answer to that problem, Sahaguru Meva Abhigachet, one should approach a guru in a traditional manner, samadhi, with offerings in hand, and shraddha, with an open mind and a curious mind, and a trust in the words of the teacher and the teaching. Shraddha bhava jnanam krishna. So, kind of guru asana, who is this guru? This guru, two words are given by Mudra. It says, shrokriyaha and brahmanishtha. Shrotriya means Vedanta Shastra, one who knows the Vedanta Shastra, one who knows the Shruti, the Upanishads, one who knows the Smriti, Bhagavad Gita, one who knows the Nyaya Vedas, such as the Brahma Sutra. He's a scholar, but that's not sufficient. One must also be a Sampradaya. Sampradaya is the traditional teaching methodology by which the teacher gives the vision of what the Shastra says to the student in a very direct and immediate way. It's a full unfolding of this knowledge. But Shrotriyatva is not enough. One must be a Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha is one who embodies the truth of the Shastra, who embodies the truth which he teaches. Shankara says in the Bhasha here, he says, Kevale Advaye Brahmani Yasya Nishtha Saha Brahmanishtha. He is one whose nishtha, not only his commitment, but his very being, his knowledge of himself, resolves into that unitary, non-dual truth. Kevale Advaye Brahmani. And I'd like to submit here that we have a guru of that caliber here in Swami Vidyadhamananda Ji, who is not only a scholar, not only a sampradaya, but one who lives his teaching in a very profound and personal way. So please turn off your cell phones. Please put your to-do list, your mental to-do list aside. All those phone calls you've made, all those emails you need to respond to will be there when you leave later today. Please stay around afterwards for a couple short program announcements about some classes that are coming up. And please give Swami Vidyadhamananda Saraswati your full attention. Thank you.
Very impressive. You can see that he himself is a scholar. He spoke several sentences in Sanskrit, not only quoted from Upanishads, but himself spoke a few sentences in Sanskrit. So, we can see his own depth of knowledge. Even though he's a Westerner, still so well versed with the Vedic tradition. Having looked next time, anyway.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. The topic of discussion tonight is living intelligently. Now, living intelligently becomes relevant only when it is also possible to live unintelligently. Otherwise, living intelligently is not relevant. Meaning that it is possible for a human being to live intelligently or unintelligently. And unfortunately, most people are living unintelligently. Therefore, to understand what is intelligent living becomes very important to us, because we have a certain agenda in life, we have a certain purpose in life. People do ask this question, Swamiji, is there a goal in life? Is there a purpose in life? Answer is yes, there is a purpose. How do we know that, how can we say there is purpose? Because we find ourselves desiring, having desires one after the other. Since the time we were born till now, we find that a variety of desires, they arise in our mind. This desire is a symptom of something inside. A desire is naturally for something that I don't have. Nobody will desire what they have. We desire something that we don't have. So we are feeling a certain need, a certain want, a certain lack in ourselves. And the purpose of desire is to fulfill or become free from that sense of lack or want. Thus we are searching for something in our life. It looks as though each one is searching different things. Because if you ask this question, what do you want in life? Everybody may give a different answer. Somebody may have value for money, somebody may have value for power, name, fame, recognition, serving the society. It looks as though different people are seeking different things. So is there something common in all of us? Are we really seeking different things in our life, or are we basically seeking the same thing? So question is there a desire behind the desire? Because we find that in spite of having fulfilled number of desires from the time that I became conscious, till now, countless desires have been fulfilled by me, and still I find myself desiring. Meaning that the desirer has not gone. desires come and go, but the desire remains there. Which means that in spite of what all have achieved, still that desire has not gone away. We say desire is a symptom of some lack or want or incompleteness within, which means that in spite of fulfilling countless desires in all these years, still that sense of lack or want has not gone. So what do I want in life? I want to become free from that lack. I want to become free from that want. I want to become free from all limitations. So this is what every human being desires. Freedom. Call it happiness. That's only happiness we've been getting. The happiness we've been getting is fleeting experience of happiness. What we want is a lasting happiness. So not only do we want, because if you ask this question, you want happiness, how much happiness do you want? This much, or that much? You say, I want this, meaning I want boundless happiness, if I had my choice. If you ask you a further question, how long do you want to be happy? 15 minutes a day will be all right for you? Or half an hour? Says, no, I want to be happy all the time, 24/7. All right, suppose we make this offer to you, that as long as you are in this hall, you are happy, as long as you leave this place, you will be miserable. Is that acceptable to you? Says, no. I want to be happy here, there and everywhere. So if we really look into what it is that we are searching for in life, not only we are searching for happiness, but we are searching for happiness which is not limited by time, not limited by place, not limited by conditions. We want limitless happiness. We have not looked into it. We have not stopped to inquire what it is that we want. But if we stop to inquire, then we will discover that each one of us wants nothing but limitless happiness. Then Swamiji, how come different people are doing different things? If everybody wants just one thing, then how come people are doing different things? Because people have different ideas about what will make them happy. So everybody seems to have his or her own idea or notion about what will make them happy. Therefore, they are searching for happiness everywhere. But in spite of searching for happiness, still I haven't found it. Now and then I do get happy. It's momentary. It comes and goes away. I'm not satisfied with that. I want lasting happiness, and I've not yet found it. Where is it? The question is, have I looked everywhere? So where is that happiness that I'm searching for? To explain this, we tell the story of 10th man. Once upon a time, in a village, there was a group of children. They wanted to go out for a picnic. In village, you cannot make independent decisions. You have to seek permission from the elders. So these children went to an old gentleman in the village and requested him, tomorrow you want to go out, can we do that? Old man says, you can do it, provided one of you takes the responsibility of bringing everybody safe. So once somebody volunteered, I will do that. All right, fellow children, let me find out how many you are? Line up before me, let me count. So he counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 10 of you, okay? Make sure that all of you return safe, safe and sound. Yes, my responsibility. So next morning, they all set out, very happy, jumping, running. They came across a river. They knew swimming in the village. They went across the river. When they reached the other bank of the river, then this fellow who had taken the responsibility of the safe return of all these boys, he thought that before we proceed further, let me verify if all of us have reached safely so far or not. So he wanted to count. He had seen last night how that old gentleman had counted. So he did the same thing. He says, fellows, come on, line up. Let me count. So they all lined up and he counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We were 10 last night. How come we are 9? Count the other side. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He counted a number of times in different ways, but the number was 9. Now he is worried, anxious. So he invites one of his friends. Maybe I am making a mistake in counting. You please come forward and count. His friend came. He also counted. Same, they studied in the same school. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Each one of them came forward one after the other. Each one of them counted 9. And thus they are convinced now that the 10th boy is lost. Now his responsibility is to take them all back safely. He says, hey, we have to search, find him, we have to search for him. So they divided themselves in search parties. One party searching in water, other party on this bank of the river, third party on that bank of the river. They searched for many hours, could not find him. Disappointed, they met at a point, were sitting under a tree, very sad, almost crying. Fortunately for them, another old man happened to pass by. He saw these children. They were so sad. He came to them, says, children, why are you so sad? What's the matter? So this leader got up and said, that we were 10 when we left and now we are 9. One of us is lost. So the old gentleman says, how did you determine that one of you is lost? Hey, we counted. How did you count? Let me demonstrate. So he demonstrated. He asked his friends to line up and demonstrated. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. See, there are 9 only. My children, don't worry. I know where the 10th boy is. Do you really know? Yes, I know. So he inspired confidence in them. He said, he knows. Maybe he's seen it somewhere. Where did you see him? They thought that he may have seen him someplace. He said, I'll show you where he is. Now count again, but carefully, with all attention. So now he is very enthusiastic, but he is at least assured that the 10th boy is there. He doesn't know where he is. So now he counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Where is the 10th boy? You are the 10th boy. Now the tube lights arose, you know, lighted in his mind. Oh, I am the 10th man. Now he realized, I am the 10th man. So for the whole day they were searching for the 10th man, right? Who were they searching for? How many 10th men are there? One, isn't it? How many 10th men are there? One, which one? Huh? The leader. How about the other fellows? Remember, each one of them came forward and was counting. So one is counting his 10th man, then each one was counting. How many 10th men are there? Each one of them is a 10th man, isn't it? So when they were searching for the 10th man, who were they searching for? For their own self, isn't it? Isn't it funny? That you are searching for your own self, isn't it funny? But such a funny thing can happen. It is happening to us as a matter of fact. Because as we say, each one of us is looking for only one thing in life. We do not want anything else. Nobody is interested in money for the sake of money. We want money for the sake of happiness. Is not so? The other day somebody came with a big suitcase full of currency notes. Said, Swamiji, the other day you were asking for donation. Here is a bag full of money. Take it. Happy? I'm happy. Says, there is one condition, that police is after this. This is stolen money, you know. Do you think I will touch that money? No. I don't want money for the sake of money. I want it for happiness, is it not so? Once I went for an interview for a very senior position, some regional manager or something. After the interview, the chief in that panel told me, that job is yours. But remember, I wish to tell you one thing, that in the past, whoever has had this job had a heart attack in 6 months. I don't want that job. Do you want? No. Meaning that we do not want anything for the sake of that. Whatever we want is for the sake of happiness. Is not so? Meaning that we are searching for only one thing, and that is happiness. In whatever anybody is doing, the only purpose is to search for happiness. And that search is like the search of the tenth man. He is searching for tenth man, that is his own self. Similarly, when we are searching for happiness, who are we searching for? So where is that happiness? The limitless happiness that we want, where is it? Where is it? Not within, not inside. Then you can perform surgery and find that. Can you perform surgery and get it? With inside? It's not inside, it is you. You follow? Not inside you. Not inside the body. You are the happiness you are searching for. I am the happiness I am searching for. That's very important. Just now Daksha Chaitanya taught the Upanishads. And this is the teaching of the Upanishads. You may have heard this sentence, Tattvamasi, that thou art. What is that? That you are saying, what you are searching for. Thou art. You are what you are searching for. Meaning that you are the limitless happiness. This is a map that Vedanta provides to us. Therefore, now, please tell me, when can we feel a sense of success? When can we feel a sense of satisfaction? Only when we achieve the goal which is dear to our heart, is it not so? Meaning that we can never be satisfied in our life until we discover that goal of that limitless happiness. How to discover? And we are searching for it everywhere. Can we ever find it? Somebody is searching for it in wealth, in name, in fame, in power, in recognition, in variety of things in heaven. But can we ever find? You cannot find something which is not there. It is like trying to extract oil from sand. You cannot, because sand does not have oil. And so also, you cannot find happiness where it is not. So what is intelligent living? Living a life which leads me to my destination. So we have a destination in our life, a goal in our life. What's the goal? The limitless happiness. Where is that goal? Where is it? My own self. Meaning that what I am searching for is to be discovered from my own self. But this is funny. A question should arise in your mind. You know what question? But Swamiji, as you say, we already are limitless happiness. Then how come we don't experience that? Should we not experience it? How come I find myself limited? How come I find myself very often unhappy? Dissatisfied, why? If limitless happiness I am, there should be no lack or want in me, but I find myself lacking and wanting. This is very strange, is it not so? It is just like the tantra. Even though he is a tantra, he is searching for the tantra. Isn't it amazing? So, why did that happen? It is because he does not know that he is a tantra. Similarly, I do not know that I am the limitless happiness. That ignorance is a problem. And so, happiness is there, but somehow it is hidden, it is veiled. See, sometimes the sun is shining in the sky and still we cannot experience the light. When? Sun is shining and still we don't experience light. When does it happen? When does it happen?
Inside.
You are inside. No, I'm here out. I'm looking there and see, I don't see him, the sun. At night, clouds, what is this? The sun is shining, but there are clouds, I can't see what is. Meaning that it is possible that I may not be able to experience what is if there is something that inhibits that, that is an obstruction to that, is it not so? Similarly, even though happiness I am not experienced because there is some obstacle. What is an obstacle? What prevents me? What deprives me of the benefit of what I am? It's amazing. I am deprived of the benefit of what I am. What is it that obstructs? What is that inhibits? What comes in the way? So, Vedanta teaches that, look, in our own, our Madhi, there are the clouds covering that happiness. Clouds of what? Clouds of what we call raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion, likes and dislikes. You know what is like and dislike? What is attachment, aversion? We have attachment for many things. You know what attachment means? Attachment means that I cannot do without something. That's called attachment. You may give me any number of pencils, but I want only that particular pencil. You may give any number of chairs, I want only given chair. Thus, we want only certain things, and without them, we find a lacking, wanting. There are many things or people in whose presence I am comfortable. In whose absence I become uncomfortable. There are others in whose presence I am uncomfortable. In whose absence I am comfortable. You may have heard this. That there are some people who give happiness wherever they go. There are some people who create happiness wherever they go. There are some other people who create happiness whenever they go. So thus in our life also, there are some who create happiness in us. There are others who make us unhappy. So naturally we like those which are the source of happiness. We dislike those which are source of unhappiness. These are called likes and dislikes, raga and dvesha. So, these are the things that come in our way of enjoying the happiness that we are. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, these three things are your enemies. Trividam narakaschedam dvaram nashanamatmanah kama krodhas tatha lobah tasmat etat trayam tyajet. Lord Krishna says that, hey Arjuna, he is telling us that these are your enemies. Kamaha, krodha, tatha lobha, tasmat etat trayam tyajet. Oh, therefore, may you give up these three. Kama, krodha, lobha. What is kama? Doesn't matter, let him do what he is doing, you know. I mean, he is really, you know. In the top of a speech, he always has a fish. What is kama? Kama means not only desire, but a craving. Simple desire is okay. It comes and you try to fulfill it. Cannot fulfill, you don't mind. Then it's no problem. But when fulfillment of desire is important to me, when my desire is not fulfilled, I get upset, I get angry, I get frustrated, then that is a binding desire. Kama. There are strong urges within ourselves. And sometimes we cannot control them. I'm very fond of sweets. So there is rasgulla, things, you know, enjoy them. The other day, my blood test was taken and the doctor told me, Swamiji, you already are too sweet. Therefore, no more sweets for you. No, that's what he says. My mind doesn't say that. Now what happens is, when the Swamis are invited for bhiksha, it's called bhiksha. The hosts are very kind. They always have several dishes, including a few sweets, which they present before you. They don't know that a Swami has this problem. I also know only now. Normally, we always tell them what it is that we like and do not like, so it's all properly, you know. But then there's not enough time to tell them. So my very favorite dishes, sweets are right in front of me. Now from within, there is an urge. And what happens is, everybody else is enjoying that. And I'm the only one who is deprived. I miss that. I feel unhappy without that, uncomfortable, unhappy without that. That kind of a desire is called kama. Krodha, of course, is anger. Lobha is greed. Therefore, what is intelligent living? Intelligent living is living in such a manner that whatever we do takes us closer to our destination. When you are making a journey and there is a destination, then it is intelligent that you proceed in the direction of your destination. Suppose you walk, you proceed, or you walk in the opposite direction. Would that be intelligent or unintelligent? Unintelligent. Similarly, what is our destination? So far, we are working with the wrong map. What is the map in our life, you know? Map is that what I want, that happiness, that success is out there. And therefore, I am searching for it out there in various things and things. Meaning that we have a wrong notion of where the destination is, and that's the reason why our efforts are never successful. This also we have to discover. See, by the way, in our life. Our Dakshacharya quoted a mantra from Upanishad. Parikshalokan karmachitan brahmano nirvedamaya. Vedanta says that we should take stock of our life and ask. There should be a sort of, say every year, you should take stock of the things and make a balance sheet. You know, we make a balance sheet, bottom line. But the real balance sheet in our life should be that to what extent have I discovered a greater satisfaction in my life? Last year I had 2 million. This year I have 3 million. Very good. But as an individual, do I find myself more satisfied than I was last year? We find that the sense of satisfaction does not come in spite of achieving many things. That's the reason why. Because we are searching for it where it is not. So what is intelligent living? Intelligent living is searching for happiness where it is, meaning within ourselves, within ourselves. And if it is my own self and still I don't experience, that is because of those clouds of what? Kama, krodha, loha. So what is intelligent living? Intelligent living is living in a manner by which that raga, dvesha, kama, krodha, all of that slowly and slowly go away from me. Unintelligent living is I keep on accumulating more of kama, krodha. Intelligent living is that I slowly and slowly give them up. So Lord Krishna teaches. You must have heard this very famous statement from Bhagavad Gita. Everybody knows Bhagavad Gita by one statement, which is that karmanivadikaraste maphalesu kadachana, right? People think that they know Gita, so I know Gita. Karmanivadikaraste maphalesu kadachana, I know it. Even if you know that much, that is also enough, but that also people think they know. To understand this statement is not easy. Keep on performing action, don't worry about the result. That's what they think there, that's what he said. Karmanyamadikaraste, Lord Krishna says that you should act in a responsible way. We are all human beings. A human being is a very blessed person, very blessed being. We are the most evolved creature in the whole universe. We have what we call a free will. What is free will? Free will is the freedom of choice. Other creatures do not seem to have that free will because they are all acting according to instinct. They are all programmed. Therefore, you can predict how a cow will behave. If you show grass, it will eat. If you place meat before cow, it will not eat. It is programmed. Our Swami says, but the owner of the cow is a different fellow. He made grass also, he made cow also. He has a choice. So this faculty of choice, free will, Lord Krishna says, karmanyavadikaraste. Hey Arjuna, you are provided with free will, with freedom of choice, and therefore you have the responsibility of making the right choice. See, when freedom is given, there is always a responsibility. Freedom without responsibility becomes license. Freedom with responsibility becomes a blessing. So this freedom that we are given of making choices will become a blessing to us if you make the right choice. Let me ask you a question. Suppose you are driving. Now you come to intersection. Which side will you go? Will you go right or left or straight? Where will you go?
Depends on where you have to go.
But you see what happens is, the road on the right is so beautiful. Such beautiful trees are there. And this road on the left is very rough, you know, and full of potholes. So which one would you prefer? The smooth road, is it not, sir? Who will prefer that part road with potholes? Would you? So will you go right or left or straight? Where will you go? You already answered correctly. What is it? Depends upon where. Depends upon what the destination is. It is possible that this road on the right, which is very smooth and beautiful road, may take me away from my destination. Whereas the road on the left, which is all, you know, up and down, with potholes, very rough. But still, if that is taking me to my destination, then that is what I have to choose. Meaning that, just as when we are driving, at every intersection we have to make a choice, and that choice depends upon the destination, where you want to go. Similarly in life also, as we say, there is a destination. And in every situation we are required to make a choice. Therefore, we should make that choice which leads us to our destination. What is the destination? I am the destination. Isn't that funny? So how can I reach the destination? By removing those clouds, those obstacles which are inhibiting the happiness that I am. How do you remove the obstacles? What do you do to remove obstacles? Now there is one way of living by which we accumulate obstacles. There is another way of living by which we get rid of obstacles. Both choices are there. There is one way of doing things by which we accumulate the obstacles, meaning that get away from our destination. There is another way of living by which we get rid of those obstacles, meaning we move in the direction of our destination. That's what Lord Krishna teaches. A simple lesson. Karmanyevadhikaraste. You have the responsibility of performing the right action. You have the responsibility of performing action with right attitude. So there are two attitudes with which you can perform an action. One is the attitude of grabbing. Other is the attitude of giving. You know, grabbing? What is this grabbing? Normally, whenever somebody comes before me, the first thought that occurs in my mind is, how can I use this person? How can I take advantage of this person? Normally that's what we do, isn't it? In every situation, we want some benefit. So whenever we perform any action, what is the motivation behind the action? How can I benefit from this? What is the benefit I am seeking? How can I satisfy my ego? How can I gratify my ego? How can I get self-gratification? How can I satisfy my desire? How can I satisfy the desire of self-gratification, ego gratification? So observe that whenever we do something, I want to gain some name, fame, recognition, something or other I am seeking through performing every action so that I think that I'll be bigger and better than what I am. That's one way of living life. But we have seen that that way of living life has not led us anywhere. So what is Lord Krishna teaching? Lord Krishna says, whenever you perform an action, your attitude should be not one of grabber, but one of giver. Normally, you perform self-centered actions. Somebody in India told me this thing that happened in their office. This was the office of Accountant General in India. You know what is accountant? It's a very important office. Because all the government contractors have to pass their bills from these people. So they are very important. If they pass the bill, then this fellow can get the payment. So one day the management decided that all these officers will be given a nameplate. On which their name will be written so that the visitor knows who he is talking to. They made triangular nameplates. On one side they wrote name in English. Other side they wrote name in Hindi. So that if English speaking person comes, he will turn that one. Otherwise he will turn the other one so that the visitor knows who he is talking to. So somebody had a bright idea. He said the third side is still empty. So they approached that painter and took him into conference and asked him to write something there. That understand that remains, you know, is not seen. The third side is not seen. But something is written there. So imagine that some contractor comes with his bills and is talking to this person who is accountant. At a critical juncture, this fellow displays the third side. You know what is written there? What is in it for me? Similarly, whenever we are about to do anything, our mind asks this question, what is in it for me? This is how we are living life. This is called a self-centered way of living life. Lord Krishna says that this is the sure formula for inviting unhappiness. We think that we are very smart, that we are satisfying our desires, we are taking advantage of others, we are extracting the most, and that is how we are becoming fatter and fatter. We are very smart. In the world, people are called successful when they get, you know, they manage to get more and more. That may be so from the worldly standpoint, but from the spiritual standpoint, it is unintelligent. Because the unfortunate algebra is, more you get, more you want. You ask any very wealthy person, a multimillionaire, and ask him, do you think that you are enough now that you don't need anything more? He says, what do you talk? What is this, Swamiji? I have 5 million, I want now 2 million more. In fact, when that fellow he started his career, he just wanted $1,000. When he became 100,000, then he now wants $50,000. Became a millionaire, he wants another million. Is it not so? Has anybody ever discovered satisfaction in wealth or power? People have power, all of them more and more and more. Has anybody ever discovered satisfaction from what they acquire? The very strange arithmetic is, as far as worldly achievements are concerned, more you get, more you want. Is that anybody experience here? No, Swami, we don't have that. You don't have that. You are all very spiritually evolved people, so perhaps you don't have that. But I'm talking about ordinary people, you know, unintelligent people. Meaning that a life dedicated to acquiring more and more is a life which is dedicated to more and more dissatisfaction, you understand? So how do we discover satisfaction? It seems that by acquiring we do not get satisfaction. Then how can we get satisfaction? What is the other thing you can do? By getting, you do not seem to get satisfaction. So what else is the way you think we can get satisfaction? Very good, very intelligent. That's the intelligent answer. That's what Lord Krishna says. That may you perform your actions in the spirit of giving. Grabber or giver? Two choices are there in every situation. Like your choice when you go to intersection, similarly in every situation a choice is whether to grab or to give. So unintelligent living is a life of grabbing. Thinking that more I have, more successful I am, happier I am. But then, material things can give us comfort. Comfort is one thing, happiness is another thing. So things are useful. I'm not saying you should not have money. All of those things are useful. They're useful. They have a place in our life, but they cannot give me happiness. Well, they don't possess that. They are not designed for that. A chair is designed for me to sit and give me comfort. But I can't derive happiness from chair because it is not designed. Happiness is to be discovered from my own self. How can I discover? By getting rid of those obstacles. How do I get rid? By the spirit of giving, offering. By spirit of grabbing, I in fact only increase those obstacles. By the spirit of giving, I get rid of the obstacles. So, one simple formula of intelligent living is living, performing all our actions in the spirit of offering, giving. Lord Krishna calls this yajna. Have you heard this word yajna? I'm sure that they must be performing yajna here, fire sacred rituals. In which, what is a yajna? We kindle the fire in the altar, invoke the devatas and make offering. So in that yajna, the most important aspect is offering. Lord Krishna says, may you make your life a yajna. Not fire ritual, but the spirit of yajna is offering. So perform your actions in the spirit of yajna, in the spirit of offering, in the spirit of dedication. But Swamiji, am I the only fellow doing that? He says, no, the whole world is doing it, except human being. Except human being, the whole universe is performing yajna. There was a verse in Sanskrit that we studied in school. It's called Subhashita. See, when you study in India, when you are growing up and studying in school in Sanskrit, there was Subhashita, well said statements. So one Subhashita was, Paropakarai vibhati surya hai, Paropakarai vahanti nadya hai, Paropakarai phalanti vrukshaha. Then the trees give fruits, trees never eat their own fruits. Trees bear fruits for others. The sun shines and gives light for others. The rivers bring water for others. And therefore, paropakara sadaiva karya. Therefore, If you want to really, if you observe the universe, you find that in universe there is this whole cosmic yajna going on. The whole universe is functioning in the spirit of yajna or offering. So Lord Krishna says, hey, you are also a part of this creation. And therefore, you should also function in the spirit of yajna. Then you are in harmony. On the other hand, you create disharmony for yourself. There is happiness where there is harmony. Unhappiness where there is disharmony. So how to live life in harmony? In harmony with the universe. There is a basic order or a basic law, and we should also function according to that order. You know, sometimes you have these musical performances and there are big orchestras, you know. There will be 25 people, 30, 40 musicians will be there, each one of them with their instruments, right? And then there is a conductor, you know, doing something. I still don't know what he's doing, but anyway, those fellows understand. So, all of them play their instruments in the same rhythm, in the same melody, is it not so? Even though instruments are many, but the harmony, the melody is one. Then there is music. If the players say once, then there is noise, not music. Similarly, this whole universe is like an orchestra. All the elements of the universe are playing their own music. What music? Of yajna, of offering. Every element, everything in the universe, even an atom also, offers, contributes in the scheme of things. Whatever is created, is created in such a manner that it contributes into the scheme of things. But they are all programmed to do that. Only human being is not totally programmed, therefore we have to make a choice. Since we have freedom, it is possible that we can abuse the freedom. So imagine, there is an orchestra and somebody is supposed to blow a conch at a given time. If he does it as it is designed, then it is fine. He blows whenever he wants, then it becomes a big noise. Similarly, we have our own instrument in this universal orchestra. Through every action, we are playing our music. If the whole universal orchestra is playing in the harmony of yajna or offering, and if we do in the spirit of grabbing, what are we doing? We are disturbing the harmony. But when you disturb the order, you also are disturbed. Our Swamiji gives a nice example. Imagine there is a tree, old tree with a very rough bark. You rub your back against that. You rub and you are rubbed, isn't it? Similarly, when you rub against the order, you are rubbed. The order is yajna. If you rub against it, meaning when we violate that order, then we also are rubbed, we are also violated, meaning that we are creating for ourselves nothing but disharmony or unhappiness. So that would be creating unhappiness is unintelligent living, creating happiness is intelligent living. So one simple formula for this evening, a lot can be said, but one simple formula. Because as human beings, we are gifted with free will or faculty of choice. Therefore, we have to make choice in every situation. There is no choice in making choice. We have to make choice. Since we have to make the choice, it is possible to make a right choice or a wrong choice. If we make the right choice, we help ourselves. To make the wrong choice, we hurt ourselves. So human being, by living intelligently, can help himself. or by living unintelligently, he can hurt himself. A dog doesn't help himself, doesn't hurt himself. He is in harmony. His program, the whole nature is programmed to be in harmony with that overall yajna. Only human being has the freedom. Therefore this teaching becomes necessary. You don't need this kind of discourse of buffaloes and donkeys. Without any discourses, they live right. They live in harmony with nature. Only human being has a problem. Whatever problems there are in the universe are all created by human beings. People complain, Swamiji, God has created this world, why did He create this starvation? Why are so people so unhappy? Why did He create this kind of world? If God made a mistake, it is one mistake, and that is to give freedom to human beings. A freedom that can be abused. Therefore, wherever we see any misery, anywhere in the world, you can be sure that misery is created by human beings. But Swamiji, how can something is happening in Ethiopia, there people are starving, what do we have to do with it here? How are we responsible? You see, when God the Creator made this earth, earth came without any boundaries or demarcation that this is India and this is Pakistan and this is United States and this is Canada. Who has created this? The Creator is not there. Who has created it? Human being. Not only we created, but now, since we get oil here, it is our oil. No, this is actually, the whole thing is universal property. We are all have equal right towards everything that is created, that is given in this planet. And if you live in that spirit, it's fine. But here, one country dumps a lot of grain in the sea to maintain the prices. Other place, people are hungry without that grain. Suppose we equally distribute it, there will be no hunger. Have you heard this statement? There is enough for the need of human being, not for the greed of human being. So because of our greed, because of our anger, because of our cruelty, we create problems for everybody. Because that is for unintelligent living, which creates all this misery everywhere. Can you imagine the whole universe living in the spirit of yajna? Can you imagine? Everybody lives in the spirit of offering, giving, yajna, contributing. There will be heaven, all problems will be solved, is it not so? We create the problems by wrong choices, by abusing the freedom, by unintelligent living. And problem in our life, we forget about other life, I don't know what we can do with others. All we can do is to do something in our own life, by making the right choices. And what is the choice? Of right attitude. Lord Krishna doesn't say that you will become renunciate or something. He doesn't say that. Well, if you become renunciate, who will run this world? So He doesn't want people to become renunciate. People ask Swami, should we have to become renunciate to? Said, please don't do that. Who will give me bhiksha, you know? So, don't do that. So it's not that we have to do something else. We need to change the attitude, that's all. That freedom we have. See, you may not have freedom to choose what to do sometimes. Even Swami, you say that there is free will. Where is free will? In my work, place of work, I have no freedom. I have to do what my boss tells me to do. At home also I have to do what my boss tells me to do. Where is freedom? Everywhere there is a boss. It is possible that we may not have freedom in deciding what to do, but there is one freedom. What? With what attitude I do, that freedom I have. I am not of freedom, in choosing what I do, you may have, the world may make that choice. With what attitude I do, that freedom I have. That is enough freedom. The attitude of grabbing or attitude of giving. So, my Guru or Swamiji says that whenever anybody comes before me, the first thought that occurs in my mind is, how can I be useful to this person? In my case, whenever anybody comes before me, the first thought that comes to me is, how can I use this person? Thus in every situation, this choice is there. How can I use or how can I be useful? I mean, what should I do? Then you will find out what to do. What is meant by being useful, we know. Because we want others to be useful to us. The thing is that we know what is usefulness because we want everybody else to be useful to me. So I know what is usefulness. What I expect from others is what I do for them. A simple lesson in what you call intelligent living. So dharma of 21st century, his whole title is the dharma of 21st century. All problems of any century can be all solved. Forget about the world. Start with ourselves. Charity begins at home. And thus we can transform our life. We need to do a simple change. That's all. A simple change of attitude completely transforms our life. You know, it gives us freedom. This whole attitude of grabbing is a very stressful. Is all stresses are caused because of that. In giving, there is no competition. When we were children, we used to sometimes go in our friends, you know, from a neighborhood and school, etc. 6-8 friends will go to a park and play. But each one of us will contribute some 1 anna, 2 anna, something like that, and buy some mixture as a feast at the end. So we have bought that mixture with our contributions. It's on the side and we play for 30 minutes, 1 hour. And then we sit down for the feast. 6 friends are there. You open that packet. There is no place, nothing like that. From that itself you eat, you know. Well, and you have to watch everybody. The way they grab things, because they know that if you are slow, we won't get much. So you have to really watch how they are grabbing. When there is grabbing, there is competition. In giving, no competition. Is it not so? Competition means all stress. Cooperation, all freedom from stress. A simple change of attitude can solve all stresses can go. All competition can go. Nobody is going to do it. Swami, what if everybody does it, there will be heaven in this earth. But they are not going to listen to us anyway. It is you are there to listen. And when we give a thought to this, we can see how the simple teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, one of the things we just told you tonight, is the spirit of offering, contributing. Paropakara sadaiva karya paropakara, helping others, serving others, offering others. That spirit is freeing spirit. We stretch ourselves. Our life becomes more inclusive. Right now, nobody has place in my life. I and mine, that's what counts. Include others in our life. You become larger than what you are. Not larger in terms of expanding physically, larger in terms of our heart. Larger we become, happier we become. More and more, you know, we contract, more miserable we become. Larger we become, happier we become. So that is intelligent living, which creates happiness for us, which leads us to happiness. That's all we want. Other things are all icing on the cake. If you have money, it is good, icing on the cake. If you are in a good position, good, icing on the cake. But cake should be there to begin with. Only icing, what can you do? If happiness is a cake, all these things are icing. If that is not there, if there is misery, then what's the use of piling up those things on? Nothing wrong in having money. Money is for good. It's empowerment. Provided I have developed this capacity to draw, then I can use my money as a bigger contributor. More you contribute, happier you are. So this is a simple lesson in, so you are coming to yourself. The spirit of giving brings me closer to myself. The spirit of grabbing takes me away from myself. Spirit of giving brings me closer to myself. So a journey is to ourself. How do you bring about journey to yourself? Simply by changing this attitude. With wrong attitude, we are only being divorced from our own self. That's why there is so much misery. Change of attitude. You come to yourself. Create a harmony within yourself. Harmony within and harmony without. And that is the sure means of being happy or successful. So I'll stop here, and if you have any questions on what we discussed this evening, you're welcome to ask. We have a Dakshali, we had a microphone, isn't it? A cordless microphone?
I think I'm loud, I can be louder.
No, you are loud, I have a problem hearing, that's all, nothing else. You are all right.
I was just saying that when you live in this corporate environment or just gateway living, you come across people who are obviously not following this philosophy, you said about the argument, and they impinge on your life that you have to interact with them. At the same time, if you keep your way giving, they take so much advantage of you that you can actually hurt people who work for you. Because you're giving away stuff or interacting in a way where your whole organization loses, because it's competition with organizations and groups of people. So how do you know when you've done enough giving? How do you handle that situation where someone's obviously taking advantage of you? You don't want to change your attitude, but at the same time you want to be handled in a practical way.
Well, by giving, I am not suggesting that you start distributing your money, etc. By giving, we mean it's an attitude of being useful in a given situation. If you feel that you are being taken advantage of, then draw your boundaries that I will extend myself this much and not more, because I feel that I am being taken advantage of. My question is, suppose somebody takes advantage of you, so what? What do you lose? Somebody takes advantage of you, you have something to give without taking from you, so you have it anyway. And giving is in the sense of being kind, being helpful, Giving does not mean only that you give money. Give what you have. Just be a kind person, a considerate person, an understanding person, a sensitive person, being compassionate to others. Nobody will dislike this. Nobody will have a problem with this. We always have a problem with the people who want to grab things from us. We have no problem with people who are kind and giving to us. So, but still, suppose you find that other people take advantage of you, you can always draw boundaries. Then you slowly try to stretch those boundaries, but as you set your boundaries so that you feel secure. The problem is we feel insecure. Whether they take advantage or not, we feel insecure. What will happen to me if I start giving? So give within your limits and hope to stretch the limits, you follow. So slowly, step by step. It's not that overnight just become giver. It's not going to happen also. Because our attitude of grabbing is so strong that to turn it around will take its own time. But it takes one step at a time, discover its value, then second step.
You have intelligent living towards achieving nirvana.
Achieving?
Can you comment on this life and the next life? And you know, we are advising, you know, giving intelligent living to reach sort of a higher order of things in our own existence.
Mm-hmm.
This life, I believe, this life and the next life, that, you know, getting to be reached at nirvana. Can you comment on our program?
Right. We are talking about only this moment. You see, the beauty about this thing is that the reward is immediate. Of this spirit of being useful or kind, you will find that one small act of kindness, start with small acts of kindness. You find that one small act of kindness gives you an inner satisfaction. If you are standing in a queue, find a little elderly gentleman, you give your place in the queue and if you do such a thing, in which you may have to put up with some discomfort, but you will derive an immediate satisfaction of having done something good. So this attitude of being useful has an immediate result. We don't have to wait for the next bus. Immediate result of discovering a self-satisfaction. So, the process itself is good. When the destination comes, it will come. The concern about destination is there if the journey is not enjoyable. Then you say, when are we reaching? Because they get bored. If journey itself is enjoyable, then when you reach destination is not very important. So every moment, as I say, one small act of kindness creates an inner satisfaction.
Choices, and aren't we all making the right choices, but then we think that we're making the right choices. How do we know which is the right choice?
The choice that we are talking about in a given situation is whether to use or whether to be useful. We are talking about choice in terms of attitude. Whether to eat orange or to eat apple or whether to do it, that choice is a worldly choice. For that you require worldly wisdom. But in terms of choosing attitude, it requires spiritual wisdom. And worldly wisdom we all have. The spiritual wisdom in terms of right attitude is what we are talking about. And there, every situation gives an opportunity to be a kind person, to be a charitable person. At least in your spirit, charity may not be in terms of giving money, etc. Charity may be in terms of just, you know, sometimes you can be charitable. When people are, even friends, when they are talking and discussing, the usual attitude is, I always argue so that I prove myself to be right. That's the usual attitude. What is charity? Let somebody else be right. No money is given here. But that is an act of kindness. You see that person that is right, see a satisfaction on that face, and you get a great satisfaction inside of having done something good. Thus, this attitude of charity, of kindness, is a choice that you make. Now, how to express kindness in a given situation is what you will decide in that situation. What kindness means in a given situation is what you will decide in a given situation. But attitude is kindness. The expression will be determined by the situation. Now, 1 minute. Yes.
Swamiji, I guess. Thank you. So, when I look at your discourse, the first initial part we talked about, you know, aspects such as karma, growth, cravings, the obscure accumulation. And then the latter part of the talk, the part of it focused on living a life of death. My question is there a correlation between the two? In other words, if you live a life of yatna, does it help reduce those varying tendencies?
Very good. Very good question. That is true. Because, as you say, more you grab, more craving there is. So this attitude of grabbing increases karma. Now when there is desire, strong desire, if that craving is not satisfied, it creates anger. If satisfied, creates greed. So this whole attitude of grabbing is conducive to growing of karma, krodha and loha. When you turn around and reverse that attitude, the karma goes, so krodha goes, so loha goes. Yes, it will happen.
Desire that you explained on the desire of sweetness. So basically what I noticed was the ignorance is the one basic root for the desireness. How do we overcome it? Because if we just the sweetness, I am trying to get it on create on next time, but so many times you doing it, you are once it shows back to you, so you are going back to it. So, what is the real solution in that case?
Okay, very good. So, what is the solution to this desire? Now we say that desire is a symptom of inner sense of lack or dissatisfaction. Now what happens? When you deliberately adopt this attitude of reaching out of giving, as I say, with every small act of kindness, you discover a satisfaction within. When satisfaction is there, there is no desire. Desire arises from dissatisfaction. But this process is of discovering satisfaction, so automatically desires will start dropping. See, purpose behind every desire is to get satisfaction. Even if you want money, you want satisfaction through that. So whenever we want something from out there, the intention is to get satisfaction. But if by performing this act of kindness, etc., we keep on discovering satisfaction from ourselves, then the need for seeking satisfaction outside does not remain. So desires automatically drop off. So when kama goes, krodha also goes, lobha also grows. Correct?
So my question isn't giving also an expression of ego? I mean, my thinking is that who am I to give? Or even my pursuit for satisfaction, isn't it really the problem that is causing my life? Or my pursuit for happiness is the root cause of all trouble? So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but my thinking is that the very act of giving, or very act of being kind, is an expression of the ego, and that too has to be surrendered or given up.
No. Kindness is no ego. When there is kindness, ego always comes out in terms of selfishness. So cruelty is an expression of ego. Kindness is opposite of ego. Grabbing is an expression of ego. Giving is opposite of ego. So by this attitude, what we are achieving is becoming progressively free from this burden of ego. Seeking satisfaction is not wrong. The manner in which we seek satisfaction can be wrong. That's why we talked of the right way of doing. If you are seeking happiness in a wrong way, it can be painful. Do it in the right way, it makes you free.
But isn't truth beyond the...
What happened to the microphone? Hello, it's gone.
Isn't truth beyond the three gunas, and if giving is a sattvic activity, aren't we supposed to eventually be beyond human sattva? So I understand that grabbing is, and all those things are tamasic or rajasic, but kindness, giving is sattva, and isn't truth beyond the three gunas?
Yes. But the only way you can go beyond three gunas by first being sattvic. Then you can transcend sattva. By being rajasic and tamasic, you can never transcend sattva. So first becoming sattvic, which is what we are doing. A day will come when you will go even beyond that. But first become sattvic. Then you can transcend sattva.
Now I'm learning, which is okay because I'm a Hindu concept. Can we, how do we bring modern love, modern healing, and around the world? There is so much organization, as the lady mentioned, so much greed, so much grabbing, and you know, we are just a cog in the wheel, and we're also have to live in. But I feel my kids, and I moved to India for 10 years, raised on more family years, I'm thinking that, you know, bring about great change in their lives. But even India is the great nation of ancient, the land of Krishna. I mean, you know, unable to claim about that Vedic upbringing somehow. But I think if the world has to change, the education has to change, the quality impartation, so you are, when you're on and out in life, that knowledge, that grandness of knowledge is with you while you're living your life, not when we are at the tail end and while raising our children. While creating our children, while marriage, and all those things. So, how do we bring about this love so it is transformational? I mean, we have the grandness and the blessing of you being here for this great hour and a half. I mean, you go away and then we're lost again in the sea of hatred and anger and all that. You know, so, please guide us.
Well, what we can do is to bring a transformation in ourselves. The only way to spread love is by becoming loving, which is what we can do. And through that we can set an example for our children, an example for whoever respects us. So that's what Lord Krishna says, that a leader should set an example for his followers. So we set an example, and so then it is learned by whoever follows us, whoever respects us. That's all we can do. And as I said, be a part of this. First of all, you learn. Our brahmachari will start classes, so you start learning. And you start spreading, you help in the process of spreading this knowledge. So we can do within our capacity what best we can do. Hopefully the world will learn from the experiences and will change. Yeah, everything in nature is always slow. Sun rises slowly, it doesn't just come up. There is no beauty. The flower takes its own time in blossoming. So everything in nature is slow.
Seems like we're going into a darker, longer night than sunlight.
Okay, so next day we'll conclude.
Thank you, Swami, for the beautiful question and answer session. Sometimes I feel like a bobblehead doll. Does Swamiji know what a bobblehead doll is? A bobblehead doll is a ceramic figurine whose head is separate but is mounted on the spring. Because whenever I hear Swamiji talk, my head is either going like this, sometimes it's going like this. But anyway, it always means yes, yes, yes. And I'm sure that if I listen to Swamiji's talk that you gave this evening 20 times, each time I've come up with new jewels. Enrich my life and make my life brighter. I'd like to thank Ramana and the board of directors here at the temple for letting us have this talk here in your beautiful new facility, your beautiful new temple. I'd like to thank all of you for coming and making Swami B's, which he's affectionately called Swami B, his first visit, his first talk. In his first visit to San Diego, such a success. Thank you all. We have books on the side there, which are welcome to peruse. Arjun Krishti is a very humble initiative to continue this teaching here in San Diego. So if you're interested in learning about any upcoming Vedanta or Sanskrit classes, please do leave your name and email on the sign-up sheets in back over there. And Swamiji will be giving another talk in San Diego tomorrow night at the First Unitarian Universalist Church in Hill. progress. And the topic of that talk will be freedom from sadness. So please come if you can. Again, thank you everybody. Thank Swamiji. We have some prasadam to Swamiji has some prasadam to pass out. So please come and take your blessings. Thank you, sir.
You see, our Nakshadi is a very learned person. I mean, you of course are very smart. He has studied an in-depth study of the scriptures from a guru, which is Swami Dayanandaji. First, at Acharya Gurukulam, we have a very beautiful ashram in Pennsylvania called Acharya Gurukulam, which is very famous. He of course continued to learn for all his life, and then again he went to another Acharya Gurukulam in Coimbatore. So he has studied scriptures in that, and he is a fellow. He has not only studied Sanskrit, but studied Pani. They used to just read aloud the Pani Sutras, you know, left and right. So here we have a person who is really learned, and I think we should take advantage of him. So we encourage him to start classes in Vedanta. And we start with introduction and then slowly and slowly progress. So where the classes will be, etc., is not yet working on it. But first we should have your names and addresses, I guess, or email or whatever it is, so that once you know how many people want to attend the classes, we will decide the venue, we will let you know, and then the initial meeting, you know, and then things will pick up. So take advantage of the classes that he is come to know San Diego with all his learning, and he will make it available to his experience. So do take advantage.